Christopher Moore previously told his readers the story of Biff, Christ's childhood pal, so Shakespeare does not seem too lofty a target. In his new book, Moore takes the fool's license to amuse and offend and retells the searing tragedy of King Lear as a raunchy comedy. If you'd like to talk with him about sending up Shakespeare and making the bard bawdier, our phone number is 800-989-8255. The email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Christopher Moore joins us now from the studios of member station KQED in San Francisco. Nice to have you back on the program.
Thanks a lot, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And I have to begin by asking whether you saw that newly discovered portrait of young Will Shakespeare that's been in all the papers this week.
I absolutely did. I have a piece in the Chronicle today about the portrait. I thought it was terrific.
Young heartthrob there.
Well, and the piece I wrote, I thought that at last we have a face to match the words. You know, we are all beautiful in love, I said in the piece I wrote. And it's basically all these amazing poetic images of human passion. And suddenly we have this guy that looks a lot more like Joseph Fiennes in Shakespeare in Love than Mr. Whipple with a quill pen as his old portrait was. So I think it's terrific.
And some people might wonder why the author of You Suck has been so entranced by Shakespeare over the years.
I think if you work with language long enough, you just realize that you're going to encounter Will at almost every turn, and he said whatever you have to say, except he said it 400 years ago and in iambic pentameter.
Yeah, we're just glad there wasn't broadcasting then.
Exactly. Yeah, imagine the material we would have burned at that point.
Exactly,
so
yes.
I think it's been a fascination that goes on with just sort of if you're an athlete, then you look at those people who are really extraordinary, and if you're a writer, I think you have to look at who I think is the greatest genius in language of all time.
And you looked, of course, not just at King Lear. You managed to swipe material from almost all of his other stuff, too.
I did. I think there's material paraphrased or quoted from about 14 of the plays and a couple of the sonnets. So, I peppered it all through there, and I sort of lived in Shakespeare's world for about 2.5 years while I was writing this book.
Though I don't think he ever saw a play of his called Green Eggs and Hamlet.
Well, yeah, there was that. I think that was just an homage for that's when I learned to rhyme was reading Dr. Seuss. And so at the point where Pocket the Fool encounters a wagon full of players on the road, they are performing Green Eggs and Hamlet. So, you know, to eat them or not to eat them. I did sort of incorporate a few modern references.
And a few, there was one review said he stoops, he doesn't deign to stoop to any joke, including naming one town Lint upon Tweed.
Well, that was just a fun tradition to do all these bizarre. I mean, if you go to England, you see all these real places like Worm's Head and Puddenhoe and things like that. And so to have dog snogging on ooze and which, you know, the ooze is a real river.
Yes,
actually.
It is.
And
there's one in France, too.
Exactly. And the what's the other one? Bongwater Crash. Some of the places where it was just fun making them up. I didn't when you start having fun with language, I had a hard time stopping myself at that point.
And it is such a great story, but not a lot of people who've read it, really thought, not enough jokes here.
Well, I think what it is the character is you have this really the most compelling character to me, and perhaps it's because of what I do. Was always the fool, but he just sort of disappears halfway through the play, and he's the only one who seems to have any sense of reality going on among Lear and his daughters and all the noblemen who are just being scoundrels behind the irises. And so I just thought it more came out of character, and then, of course, you know, he being a fool, he would be funny, I would think.
And the fool, I mean, wears that funny hat, the motley, to symbolize the fact that, he can get away poking fun at the king and all of the royal retinue because, he's supposed to be impotent. Not so much in your case.
Not so much. He sort of makes up my version. Shakespeare doesn't actually name the fool. I've named him Pocket, and it's because he's very small, and he was an orphan and found at a nunnery. And they carried him in their apron pockets, and therefore he got the name Pocket. And so to sort of make up for his political impotence and his small size, he he basically seduces everyone in the castle that'll stand still for him, and that became the motivating character aspect of that of the story for me in Fool rather than in Lear, where it's just treachery and grief.
There's plenty of treachery and grief. Don't get me wrong. There's blood flows through this book.
Well, yeah. There's tons of murder, but also you get a lot of shagging with it too. So it's two treats in one.
Our guest is Christopher Moore. His most recent book is Fool, which is a rewrite of Shakespeare's King Lear. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Let's start with Rick, and Rick's with us from Quantico in Virginia.
That'd be Quantico in Maryland.
Ah, oh, go ahead. I apologize.
That's not a problem.
There is one in Virginia. I just...
I know. It's just about one street long. I was wondering, and thank you so much for taking my call. I have every one of your books, Christopher, and I've enjoyed every one of them. And the only problem I have is I cannot imagine what goes on in your head when you're thinking up stories like this, and where do you draw all your characters from and your storyline from?
Well, almost every review that's done of my books, they just accuse me of taking drugs while I'm writing. So I'm just going to go with that. Pretty much I'm just wasted all the time. No, I think that it's just my default setting for a reaction to the world is funny. And so when I read something as horrible as the tragedy of King Lear, and horrible in the sense of the tragedy of the family in it, my reaction is, well, how can I make fun of this? And so... it's something that comes very naturally to me.
At least in the book itself, there's a more specific story you tell about the origins of how you got started on this.
Exactly. Well, this was I wanted to write about a fool before I wanted to write Shakespeare, because I wanted to write about someone who could speak truth to power. And it had seemed for the last 8 years or so, the only people who were actually telling me what was going on were comedians. And so I thought, well, I'll write that in a historical sense. And it was my editor, Jennifer Brell in New York, that suggested I do Lear's Fool. That was easy enough for her, but it sort of set the bar pretty high for me.
Yeah. Why don't you try Shakespeare?
Yeah, because you have all that extra time on your hands. And it was great. And I hadn't had Shakespeare since 10th grade. So it really was starting from scratch with me. But what a great adventure it was. I'm really happy that I did it.
How did you research it?
I went to England a couple of times and went around looking at old stuff because they keep it there. Just wandering around castles and looking at the Department of Pointy Things, which every castle apparently has, trying to get a feel for the medieval world, because the play isn't really specifically set in any time or place. You get the feel that it's about the 12th century, but it's not really set in any particular time. I guess it is set in a place. So I spent about a month...
Sometime after Arthur and before Elizabeth.
Yeah, but there's all sorts of pagan aspects in it, you know, because the real Lear lived in 400 BC, if what we know about it is true, which means there were no castles or dukes or earls. It was a mud hut with an old man ranting at the storm. So I sort of had a license in that respect. So I spent a month in England and wandering around France looking at old stuff and then started reading the plays, listening, more importantly, listening to the plays, because I needed to be able to write a sort of... Elizabethan hybrid language that Americans could easily understand and have fun with. So I had to do that by ear. It couldn't be done mathematically, or I couldn't do it mathematically anyway.
Rick, thanks very much.
Well, thanks Rick. So much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go now to, this is Kate. Kate Withers from Louisville.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Kate.
I am an English teacher, and I have a couple comments about this. First of all, I'm thrilled that you are doing this. Shakespeare is supposed to be bawdy and irreverent and not taken very seriously. And even when he wrote it, he took things that were kind of sort of historical and then twisted them to make political points. And 400 years later, we have this concept of Shakespeare as very, very high class and, you know, oh, no one could ever possibly understand it. And he wrote for almost the lowest common denominator with the idea that people were going to come because they wanted to see blood and guts and, you know, sex and stuff on stage. And so to take something that, even though Shakespeare did not intend perhaps this particular play to be hysterically funny, to take something like that and twist it to kind of show today's audiences a different version of what Shakespeare can be just, you know, makes me quite happy as someone who tries to do that in my life as a teacher.
That's great to hear. I think that, you know, not only was Shakespeare bawdy, but how bawdy would he have been if he hadn't been dealing with the rise of the Puritans, which was going
right.
on in England at that time. So I think that...
I think
because I have the First Amendment and I'm not going to have my hands cut off because Elizabeth
right.
you know, was known to do that to writers who she disagreed with, I have a lot more license, and I guess I used it on this one, but I'm glad it
well,
works for you, Kate.
You burned it all, Christopher.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I just wanted to say thanks very much, and I love your comment about taking something and, you know, a character and speaking to something politically, because at his heart, at his core, that's what he did all the time. You know, he changed his plays based upon, you know, the monarchy he was under. And so I really appreciate someone seeing that and changing things again today, because that's exactly what he would have done if he were still around. He would have changed it again to make his own point.
And we're all groundlings here, Kate.
Yeah. Precisely. I'll take my peanuts off the air.
Okay, thanks
so much, Kate.
We're talking with Christopher Moore about his latest book, Fool, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Bobby's with us on the line. Bobby calling from Duluth.
Hi. I am horrified at the thought of turning King Lear into a tragedy, into a comedy. It's the greatest tragedy of all time. I saw Sir Ian McClellan act it last fall, and it was a life-altering experience. And the reason The Fool goes away is because the need for a sense of reality must vanish.
Okay. Good for you. I have plenty of tragedy in the news. I just decided I would see what I could do.
And are you going to give the book a try just to see how it goes?
Me?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I think you can't just read King Lear. You must see it acted. It's such a different thing when you see it on a stage. A book just won't do it, either his or yours.
Okay. Thanks very
okay.
much, Bobby. Bye-bye. Let's see this email from... Amanda in Charlotte, North Carolina. I just finished Fool and passed it along to my mother, a retired professor of English literature. Though she loved Mr. Moore's previous works, especially Lamb, I admit that I braced myself for a discussion on proper interpretations of Shakespearean prose when she finished the book. I couldn't have been more wrong. She loved it and even passed it along to some of her former colleagues in the English department. Maybe Mr. Moore could have that put on the cover of the paperback edition of Fool, now English Lit Professor approved.
You know, it's really funny. My other book, Lamb, it sort of has this, I get a lot of notes from teachers that say, I can't really give this to my students because I'd lose my job, but I sort of pass it to them under the desk and tell them, especially my bright students. And I think there's just that better feeling, cookie stolen or tastes so much better that if you know, so I don't know if this is going to be taught in literature, certainly not at a high school level, but, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't think that about Lamb either. And it's being taught in at least three seminaries in the Midwest. So who knows? But I
didn't know that. And I was going to ask if you got more grief from Lamb or telling the story, if readers don't know, the Christ story told by his best friend Biff, or taking on Shakespeare here.
Well, you know, Lamb came out 6 years ago, so I've just had more time. But there was almost no negative reaction to that at all, Neil, which was a big surprise to everybody.
Disappointment to you, I'm sure.
Well, we paid people to burn it and they wouldn't. But it really has been sort of accepted by people of faith, which again was mortifying to me. But I have no idea what to expect. So far, it seems that the people who are more familiar with Shakespeare like this better because it gives them a touchstone. And that was the best I could hope for.
Let's go to Mike. Mike with us from Ocean City, Maryland.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay,
good.
I wanted to let you know you're one of my favorite authors, and my question was, are any of your characters in any way autobiographical, like maybe C.O. Crow or Tucker Case?
He's referring to some of the earlier books. I write rascals quite a bit, Mike, and that's and I think that I may have that spirit. I'm not nearly as outrageously brave as many of my rascals that I write, including Pocket in this book, but I think the rascal spirit it must reside in me somewhere, and so that's the autobiographical part. Some of the characters in my earlier books that hail from the Midwest and go to California as part of the story sort of follows my biography as a young man, so I suppose that Tommy from Bloodsucking Fiends might be might be autobiographical a little bit, but the other guys, the real rakes. I don't know that if I have that. I have more talent with a pen than I really have any other way.
Well, great. Thanks for answering my question.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mike. And I think we got time for one more. Let's go to Beth. Beth with us from Baton Rouge.
Hey, this is really exciting to talk to you, Christopher Moore. You're one of my favorite authors.
Thanks, Beth.
I just have to tell you, lately I've been trying to revisit the things that I was supposed to read in high school but didn't really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading Fool right now, but reading Fool, I cannot touch Shakespeare. You have ruined Shakespeare for me. I'm really enjoying this book. I think it's hilarious.
My work is done here. If I've ruined Shakespeare for one person, then I have done my job.
I'm really enjoying it. So
well, good. The people keep asking, by the way, that whether they should read Lear before they read this. First, I don't think there's a prerequisite to it, but I also think that it's so divergent from the original that it almost it might be a disappointment. If I were going to read them in any order and I weren't familiar with Lear, I would certainly read Fool first and then read Lear. And then it might even be funnier to you in retrospect.
And I have to say, I've read them both, and I don't think if you read Fool first, it's not a spoiler.
No, because it's not a tragedy.
Well, yeah, but it's the language between the two. I mean, I found Shakespeare to be a little bit dry, and
oh, give it another try. I think you might enjoy it.
Okay,
you know,
they finish Fool first.
Okay.
There's a couple of editions of No Fear Shakespeare and I think Shakespeare Simplified where they do a translation into modern English on the opposite page, on the facing pages. That's a great thing to experience if you're going to read Shakespeare.
Christopher Moore, thanks very much. We're going to have a translation into Elizabethan English on the opposite pages of Fool.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Christopher Moore's latest book is called Fool. You can find an excerpt at our website, if you're up for it, at npr.org/talk. His other novels include You Suck and Lamb, the Gospel According to Biff, Child's Christhood Pal, with us today from KQED in San Francisco. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Ira Flato will be here with a look at the hunt for subatomic particles. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.